take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering upon one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. Was anybody else here disturbed by that when you hear it? I remember the first time I heard the story of Abraham and God's command that he sacrifice Isaac to God as a burnt offering. I was a very young boy, but obviously old enough to get the point that God told Isaac's dad to take his only son up on a mountain and kill him and then burn him. I also understood that the reason God asked Abraham to do that was to show God how much Abraham loved him. So there was the preacher. This was a Southern Baptist church, because I was raised in the Southern Baptist church, and in the Southern Baptist church they tended to take the Bible literally. Now they take it even more literally. I just want to stop and say that the Southern Baptist church used to be a place where people believed the Bible literally but were still nice to people who didn't. So there was a preacher telling me that Abraham had lied to his son who trusted him. And then we're told Abraham took his son to the Mount of Moriah and tied him up like an animal and put him on an altar and took out a knife and was ready to kill Isaac and then burn him as an offering to God. Now, if that doesn't have anything to do with why Isaac and his mother got together to betray Abraham about who was going to get the inheritance, I will be totally confused about how psychology works. I don't think I need to tell you how much that story frightened me, and on more than one level, it frightened me. I couldn't help the thought that came into my mind, would my father do that to me if God told him to? And that wasn't the worst part of it. I got the point that God was testing Abraham, and that once Abraham passed the test, God let him off the hook. And even as a child, I tended to think about things with a kind of logic. So I figured out in my child's mind, it was obvious that it wouldn't work if God always let the father off the hook at the last minute. It was pretty clear to me that if God always let fathers off without killing their sons, then fathers would come to know that God wasn't really going to make them kill their sons. If God allowed that to happen, God's command to kill their sons wouldn't really be a test any longer. Nobody would take it seriously. So I wondered, is it possible God might ask my father to kill me and burn me up and this time really make him do it? But though the immediate consequence of my hearing that story as a child was fearfulness, the long-term consequences of that story were that the story of Abraham and Isaac have played a role and how I have come to understand the Bible. The role that they've played is sort of being there in the back of my mind over the years as I thought through how do I understand Scripture. Although I started off as a child feeling some degree of fear, over time, the story became like one of those clues in a detective novel. For years, I sensed in the story of Abraham and Isaac the kind of clue a detective feels is right on the edge of his awareness. The detective has a hunch that something important is there, that he's observed, but that he can't quite grab a hold of. And so it just remains for a long time out of his reach. For years, the clue in the story of Abraham and Isaac that would bring things into focus remained not only beyond my grasp, but largely a clue about which I wasn't really consciously aware. Yet, as a faithful churchgoer, I couldn't get away from being regularly confronted with the story, most commonly as a story that's read during Holy Week, as a lead-up to the crucifixion of Jesus. There was a certain irony that the story of Abraham and Isaac is traditionally viewed as a foreshadowing of Jesus' crucifixion. The irony was that the theological connection that is so often made between the story of Abraham and Isaac and the story of Jesus' death and crucifixion, that theological connection was the primary block. It was a block in my mind that prevented me for so long from being able to grasp and articulate within my own thinking that important something within the story of Abraham and Isaac that would eventually bring my understanding of my own faith story into sharper focus. In my sermon last week, I said, if we read the Bible with an attitude that we must say, oh yes, of course that's how it should have happened because it happened in the Bible and it was done by one of the main protagonists in the biblical story. So just like the story tells us, it must have been God's will. Last week I said, when we do that, we make an idol of the Bible. But today I want to add to that observation by saying that when we read the Bible literally, we cut ourselves off from seeing other possibilities about the meaning of what we've read. And I'll take that observation another step by saying that when we read the Bible with a set understanding of some doctrine that the passage is supposed to uphold, in this case the doctrine could be substitutionary atonement for those of you who understand what that's about, but we won't go there. But if we read the Bible with the idea that we already have some doctrine that a passage is supposed to uphold, we doubly cut ourselves off from seeing other possibilities in the meaning of what we've read. So then let's go back to the story of Abraham and Isaac. What are the first and most obvious assumptions that believers tend to make when they read the story literally? An interesting thing, I think, is that those of us who don't read the Bible literally still read the Bible literally a lot of times. It's sort of, you know, we're not necessarily consistent in that. So let's start with the opening words of the reading. God tested Abraham. He said to him, Abraham. And he said, here I am. God said, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains that I shall show you. Now, reading this literally, here's a list of what I think would be the first assumptions. One, that Abraham was a real person. Therefore, dismissing the possibility that this story could be mythological. Two, that Abraham was able to hear God speak, either aloud or in his mind, in a manner that was as clear and unambiguous as I'm speaking to you right now. Now, I have to tell you, I don't believe that. I don't believe that anybody ever in history heard God speak to them as unambiguously as you're hearing me right now, unless that is you think I'm pretty ambiguous in what I'm saying. But I think you know, I don't think there's anybody in history who ever, you know, absolutely knew without any doubt that God's voice was speaking to them. But the number two assumption is that he did to Abraham. And number three, assuming the first two are true, that Abraham was a real person and that God was speaking to him unambiguously, therefore, the third assumption is that God is actually saying what it tells us that God is saying. That God is actually giving Abraham this command for Abraham to kill his son Isaac. All of those are assumptions that we make if we listen to the story literally. So then what is another possibility for understanding this story that might not come to mind if we take the story literally? My experience of fear when I heard the story of Abraham and Isaac as a child has had a lasting impact that has played an ongoing role in my understanding of the Bible, of doctrine, and of the way I view Jesus. It was for me a small part, but an important part of a long spiritual journey that eventually led me to see that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life that speaks to me most clearly of God. Now, the reason that's important is because if Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, and Jesus says that God is a merciful and loving God, and Jesus says to love your enemies and do good to those who would abuse you, and I put all of that together and I say, okay, Jesus is my teacher. Jesus is telling me what it is that I need to believe about God. Then I have to say, something is wrong with this story about Abraham. Abraham heard God calling him to come out from the land of Ur of the Chaldeans, a pagan culture, to be the founding father of a new nation of people who would worship the one true God. The people whom Abraham left behind worshiped many gods, and there is archaeological evidence of human sacrifice in the burial tombs of monarchs from that area of Ur, which was approximately in the land of Samaria, Assyria, the Middle East now. But Abraham was a man who didn't just follow the crowd or do just what he was told by others. He was a man of compassion. He was a complex man. He was a man of compassion who listened with his heart. And it was because Abraham was compassionate and listened to his heart that Abraham was able to hear the voice of God calling him to a new way of life and a new understanding of the divine. Now that sounds sort of ambiguous. That sounds sort of confusing. He's called to a new way of understanding God. And yet here we are hearing this story about Abraham being told by God to sacrifice his son. God was able to speak within the heart of Abraham and reveal to him the God of love and compassion, who, in the words of the psalmist, demands mercy and not sacrifice. This is getting more and more confusing. Abraham came to see the unity of creation. He came to recognize that God could not be contained in an animal or an idol. And in the end, he came to recognize that God was too loving ever to demand a human to be sacrificed for his appeasement after the manner of pagan gods. Now, here we have to stop and think about a little bit about the struggles that each one of us goes through in life as we experience changes in our understanding. The process of coming to a new understanding often involves inner turmoil. inner battles with the insistent voices of our past, and the insistent voices of Abraham's past probably were saying to him, Abraham, if you really love God, you know what you learned as a child, that the things that you love the most, you have to give up to God. You have to sacrifice them. So this is something you've got to do. So Abraham went on his way to do it. I'm seeing Abraham as a man who was clearly torn. When Isaac asked him, where's the lamb? He said, God will provide the lamb. That's the first indication to me that that Abraham was hoping that something was going to change. And so even as in his mind, Abraham heard through the context of his pagan heritage the voice of God calling to him to sacrifice his son Isaac. In his heart, Abraham yearned for a sign that would free him and his people from their former yoke to human sacrifice. The story tells us that the sign came in the form of a ram caught by its horns in a thicket. If we want to do the right thing, and we look for a sign, oftentimes the sign will come. When Abraham saw the ram caught in the thicket, he was freed, fully freed from the voices of his past. Now, let me be unambiguous here. What I'm telling you is that I don't for one minute believe that God asked Abraham to sacrifice his son. I believe that Abraham's inner voices about what God demands that came out of his childhood told Abraham that he needed to sacrifice his son. You know, we've got two stories that I can think of in the Bible where God puts people to the test by asking them to do horrible things or destroying their lives. We've got this story of Abraham, we've got the story of Job, and maybe somebody else can think of other stories, but those are the two stories that I think of. And I don't believe that that's the way God works. And the reason that I don't believe that that's the way that God works is because Jesus taught me that that's not the way that God works. And I can't have another teacher. There isn't somebody that I know of that can teach me better about how God works than Jesus. If we choose to believe in God as Jesus revealed God in his life and ministry, a loving God who prefers mercy and not sacrifice, then it would follow that the story of Abraham and Isaac is not about what God asked of Abraham, but rather a story about how God broke into the muddled understanding of this one man to reveal to him his love and grace. God used Abraham to lead a whole people into this new understanding of the one and only God as Lord of all creation. With the story of Abraham and Isaac, the idea of a God who needed to be appeased through human sacrifice was wiped from the understanding of the descendants of Abraham for all time. There's not another story about God that tells us that God ordered anyone to kill anyone or sacrifice anyone after that story. So for me, this is an iconic story. It is an iconic story that says we are turning a corner here where human sacrifice is left behind. God as a despot is left behind. And God as a merciful loving, kindly God has come to fill that vacuum. God began the process of teaching the children of Abraham to understand that the one God whom they were called to worship was a God who gives life, not a despot, who plays chicken with those who look to their God in faith. Some of you may remember some of the old movies from when you were teenagers where kids would get on a railroad at a railroad track with their cars and sit on the railroad track, and the first one to drive off the railroad track was a chicken. So that's what I mean by playing chicken. So here we have a story of, you know, how far is it going to go with this, you know? Is God going to stop me or not? And I'm saying, Abraham had to deal with that. Abraham had to deal with that. God helped him to deal with that. But many centuries were still to elapse before the next step in the understanding of God would take place. So during the centuries that elapsed between Abraham and the coming of Jesus as the Christ, and to some extent, almost more importantly, the destruction of the temple, thousands upon thousands of animals and uncounted grain went up in smoke. For centuries before Christ, the senseless slaughter and waste of livestock and grain, which could have been used to feed hungry people, went on. And there were some who knew better, but they weren't listened to. We hear in the Psalm 40, "In sacrifice and burnt offering you take no pleasure. Burnt offering and sin offering you have not required." One thing that we can take literally about the Bible is that people who wrote the Bible disagreed with each other about what God wanted. So that's another reason why we need a teacher. We need Jesus to clear it up. Who is right? Do we need to have burnt offerings or don't we need to have burnt offerings? Jesus said, no, we don't need to have burnt offerings. So it went on, and it went on until Jesus came and began and taught the people something different, and until actually the Romans destroyed the temple. I don't know when burnt offerings would have stopped if the Romans hadn't destroyed the temple. Sometimes evil works for good. Jesus came proclaiming the God of love and forgiveness and mercy. In our gospel lesson, we hear Jesus calling his followers to a welcoming community. Whoever welcomes you welcomes me and the one who sent me. Jesus welcomed those who others feared, those who others found repulsive. He welcomed lepers, beggars, prostitutes, criminals, invading soldiers. He welcomed the rich and the strong as well. He welcomed the thief on the cross beside him. And he taught us not of a God who tests us by asking us to harm those whom we love, but who calls us to love, to welcome, and to give aid to the most vulnerable among us. Amen.